times when it pulls you closer to who you truly are, and when it pulls you away from your center. Today is Valentine's Day. The National Unitarian Universalist Association sponsors a public advocacy campaign called Standing on the Side of Love, that seeks to harness love's power to stop oppression. For 30 days, from Martin Luther King Day through Valentine's Day, they have teamed up with other groups nationwide to have educational events called 30 Days of Love, bringing compassion and courage to bear for immigrant justice, racial justice, and equity for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer persons. This is just one way of claiming Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day can bring up many meanings, many images. If I were to pull this room, we might hear many different things. Perhaps that Valentine's Day is associated with romance, with Hallmark cards, with candy hearts, perhaps eating too many of them, with roses, with construction paper and white paper doilies and glue. We might hear that people experience Valentine's Day as part of the patriarchal system that makes heterosexual relationships the norm in media and much of our life. We might hear that people associate Valentine's Day with loneliness, being painfully single, fighting the romantic myth that we can only be happy when in a partnership. And we might hear that people have been claiming Valentine's Day as a time to affirm exactly what kind of loving relationship you are in right now, in your own creative way. These mixed messages about Valentine's Day lift up the complexity of how the sensual and the spiritual and the ethical are interconnected, and all of these are worth talking about in church. I once heard a retired professor of spirituality from the Mennonite Seminary in Harrisonburg speak, and she said, "Life is messy. Life comes into this world with the water breaking. Life continues with monthly cycles that involve bleeding. Sexual intercourse involves fluids. Life is not neat. The very essence of being creative is messy." Our Unitarian Universalist Association is committed to educating our youth in all ages about healthy human sexuality in a curriculum called OWL. O-W-L stands for Our Whole Lives. OWL is founded on some basic assumptions. I'm going to read them to you. All persons are sexual. Sexuality is a good part of the human experience. Sexuality includes much more than sexual behavior. Human beings are sexual from the time they are born until they die. It is natural to express sexual feelings in a variety of ways. People engage in healthy sexual behavior for many reasons, including to express care and love, to experience intimacy and connection with another, to share pleasure, to bring new life into the world, and to have fun and relax. The final assumption on which this curriculum is based: sexuality in our society is damaged by violence, exploitation, alienation, dishonesty, abuse of power, and the treatment of persons as objects. classes in our series makes a useful clarification, which I want to lift up because so many people have found it helpful in how we frame the discussion. And when this is given in class, it's shown as five overlapping circles. So as I name these five areas, you may see them as distinct or overlapping. So one area is sexualization. So that's when we talk about media messages, violence, how society creates messages about sexuality. The second area is intimacy. That's when we're talking about the vulnerability and responsibility of being in a relationship. A third area is the biology of sex and gender expression. A fourth area is information about health, health choices, about reproduction and sexual activity. A fifth area is sensuality, which are ways that humans have pleasure and comfort with their bodies. And sensuality is the area that I'm primarily talking about today, especially when our senses cause us to have desires. All of human history is full of examples in stories, literature, movies, poetry, of situations where two people's desires didn't quite line up. Even in the best of situations, it can be hard for each person to truly know what they desire, to act on it in a time and way that lines up with another person's desire, and that other person's ability to act on it in a time and a way that's clear. So the bad news here, as you probably know from life experience, is how often desires get us into awkward or painful situations. The good news here is that it is not the desire itself that is the problem. It is not the desire itself that is the problem, but the human capacity to kid ourselves, to be angry, to be anxious, to be afraid, those are the things that twist things up. So my friends, what is holy and whole is to know ourselves as much as possible, to honor that as much as possible, to bring that inner honoring to another person and honor them. That is the holy journey of being a fully alive sexual person. And when things end up in confusion or pain, then we have our tools of forgiveness and reconciliation to help us move onward. So let's take an example. On the cover of your order of service is a poem. So I will read it now. I have eaten the plums that were in the icebox and which you were probably saving for breakfast. Forgive me, they were so delicious, so sweet, so cold. That's written by William Carlos Williams, who lived in this country, born in 1885 and died in 1963. Now in this poem, he states that he ate some plums. His senses of taste and touch were delighted. In fact, so delighted that he ate them even though he thought someone else wanted them. We can presume that this someone else was someone that he was close to because they seemed to share a refrigerator, and he knew there's a blank page right here. Did you do that, Adam? to get out of my apartment. Even though you never thought I would. Forgive me. You were driving me insane. I share this example because when we act on desires, we may discover that there are consequences greater than we expected. The choices we make have an effect on other people, and those other people respond with the boundaries that they choose. This example is about the sense of taste and touch, and this example can lead us to a wider inquiry of all of our senses. And so I ask you now, if I were to ask you what the five senses are, what would you say? And if you're a tactile person, feel free to indicate with me. Seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, and touching. So these help us perceive the world, taking the external and making it an internal experience. Isn't that what happens when you smell a flower? When you taste food? When warm water flows on your skin? When you hear a song? When you see the sky? We are changed by these sensory experiences. Now, I acknowledge that I'm speaking in very general terms here. I am well aware that not all of us have all five senses, and that our senses increase and decrease at different times in our lives, and that sometimes medical conditions cause us to adapt the ways that we savor life. In this discussion of the senses, I want to do what I often do, which is turn to ancient Indian philosophy for insight. And on this area, ancient Indian philosophy has extensive discussion of these senses. Because we need to be able to identify our senses. Because we humans have a propensity to let our senses run us instead of using them in service of what we know is healthy. In other words, our desires get the better of us. So a spiritual life is about learning to really see what's going on in that dynamic. Watching ourselves with enough mindfulness to see when we're acting from a desire that overindulges our senses at great cost, and distinguish that from when we are acting from a desire that is about a higher good. For example, again, the plums in the poem above. Another example would be eating a sweet food and then going beyond a simple contentment with the food into overconsumption that has health costs. Another example is when we enjoy the touch of another person but need to discern whether we're in a relationship in which that touch is appropriate. In all these cases, the sense pleasure is not bad. But if we act without looking at the outcome, it might lead us to cause harm to ourselves or others. But what can we do about it? Many religious traditions around the world have spiritual practices in which a person takes time out from daily activity. Take a break from walking, talking, working, playing, all those ways we use our senses to navigate the world. During this quiet retreat time, a person withdraws their senses in the same way that you might withdraw your hand from a glove. During this time of spiritual practice, a person can reconnect to the place inside, which is the even keel, the clear guide, where desires can be filtered for the highest good. For you, that kind of spiritual retreat might be 10 minutes on a meditation cushion in your bedroom. It might be the relaxation time at the end of yoga class. It might be sitting quietly with your morning coffee. It might be a power nap might be on Sunday mornings during the candle lighting. It might be whatever way you find stillness, which I hope you do sometimes. I'm talking about a state of calmness in which our minds settle down and our internal physiology changes. Because there truly is a chemical change that occurs in our brains so that new options open up for our soul. Because there's no longer the cluttering thoughts and desires clogging the channel between our conscience and our actions. After this kind of stillness, a person can move back out into the world, into relationship, into taste, into speech, into listening. And then you can do these things from the guidance of your heart and a desire that is pure. This is good news, my friends. Being your whole self, no parts separated or repressed, this is when your desires pull you closer to who you truly are. I will close with a suggestion.